Okay, good morning, Kutnerev Shabbos. Last week, I mentioned at the end that we would spend a couple minutes finishing up the topic of Emunah and discussing the idea of Reb Chaim and the Beis Halevi and the like, that there is two levels. There's Yediyah and Emunah. Emunah starts where it ends, and Yediyah is that which we can know and prove, and Emunah is that which we believe, even though it is not provable. However, I decided that we should start the new topic. So if you want, you could look at it in your source books, and I can give you additional Mari Makomos if you're interested. So that then brings us to the new topic, which we'll begin Bezras Hashem today, and that's the topic of Olam Haba. So the first question we have to think about when discussing Olam Haba is this something that we should really think about? Is this something that we should discuss and talk about? Why not? The Gemara in Brachos Lamed Aleph Amud Beis says, "Kol hanivraim kulan lo nisnavu elalimos hamashiach." Sorry, "Kol hanivraim kulan lo nisnavu elalimos hamashiach." Aval Olam Haba ayin lo rasa lo kim zulasecha. That when we look at the prophets, Yeshayahu, Yechezkel, etc., and the truth is even the Torah itself describes Yemos HaMashiach and existence b'Yemos HaMashiach. However, the Torah does not in anywhere, at least explicitly, discuss Olam Haba. The Nevi'im were not menaveh about it. Why not? So the Gemara concludes, that's because Ayin lo rasa lo kim zulasecha. No one else has conceived of it, could conceive of it, except for God Himself. And as the Rambam explains in Hilchos Tshuva Perk Ches Halacha Zayin, that's because we can't understand it. It's not simply that we don't know about it, it's a mystery because the information was withheld from us. The reason why we don't know about it is because we cannot conceive of it. The Rambam writes, V'kama kameh David v'hisaveh l'chay olam haba. How much did David long for and yearn for Olam Haba? Shenemar lule hamanti l'ros betuv Hashem b'eretz chayim. Eretz chayim, as we'll see, is almost always a reference for the eretz, the chayim shehu l'olam. For odianu ha-chachamim rishonim, Shebetovas olam haba ein koach ba'adam lahasiga aboria. Ve'ein yodea gadla v'yafya v'atma ela kodesh baruch hu levado. No human being could possibly understand its greatness. V'shekol hatovos hamisnavim bahem hanavim liyisrael einan elu ledvarim shebeguf shenanin bahem yisrael liyemos hamashiach v'zman shetashav hamemshal liyisrael. Aval tovas olam haba Ein la erech v'dimyon, v'lo dimua neviim, kedei shelo yifchisu osa b'dimyon. Very interesting. Rambam writes that why is it that we can't imagine it? Why is it that it can't be described by the neviim? The answer is because Olam Haba is a completely spiritual existence, and we who have a physical existence, we have a physical body and the like, and live in a physical world, cannot imagine of a spiritual existence, a spiritual pleasure totally separate from the body. And then the Rambam says, well, why didn't the Nevi'im try to describe it? At least to the extent that it's possible to describe. And the answer is, because that would detract from it, the Rambam says. Shelo yifchesu osa b'dimyon. Any attempt to describe it will be insufficient, and therefore take away. And therefore, it's better to leave it unstated and undescribed. Now you could ask, well, one second. The Rambam says the exact same thing about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we saw before, any dimyon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is inaccurate and in fact detracts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but yet the Torah and the Nevi'im do so. So what's the difference? And the answer is probably pretty straightforward, that it's true that describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away from the truth, and it is inaccurate. But it's, as it were, a necessary evil. It's something that we need to do, because we need to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need to serve Him, we need to daven to Him, we need to internalize and concretize our belief and knowledge of his existence, and thus we have no choice but to give mashalim and attributes, even though in a sense they're not truly accurate. We need to learn from his actions, and so on and so forth. However, when it comes to Olam Haba, we don't really need to know about it. There isn't that same necessary evil, and therefore, why describe Olam Haba if anyway that's going to take away from what it truly is? Hu sheyishayahu amar, ayin lo rasa elokim zulasecha, yaseh lemechak elo. Klomar, hatova shelasa osa ayin navi, velo ra'a osa ela Elohim, asa osa ha'elohim la'adam shemechak elo. Amru chachamim kol nevim, kulam lo nivu elu limos ha'mashiach, aval ha'olam haba, ayin lo rasa elokim zulasa. The Ramban in Shar HaGmul presents the same idea with an added kinech. V'rabosenu heim shehivinu upirshu derech v'ha'inyan ha'yichud hazeh v'lo shiyagia adam liyidiyas mahuso. Even though Chazal do describe Olam Haba to some extent, in other words, as opposed to the Torah Shebichsav, which totally withholds from any sort of description, Chazal do on occasion offer descriptions. However, these descriptions do not truly describe its essence. Sheyedia hi hazchus be'atzmo. This knowledge or understanding would be the schus or the dibuk be'atzmo, meaning to say that if you were to understand Olam Haba, you would be in Olam Haba. What does that mean? We'll elaborate on this point a little further later on, but the basic idea is that the existence of Olam Haba is one of Nen and Meziv Hashchina. It's one of incredible closeness, intellectual and emotional closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is impossible as long as we are in the guf. So as long as we have a guf. And therefore, if we were to actually understand it, then we would be there. In other words, we could only understand it if we are able to achieve this spiritually elevated state, and that's only possible once we're there. So therefore, to understand it is to be it, and thus, we can't understand it. So if that is the case, as the Rambam and the Ramban and Chazal tell us, then perhaps we should end this shiur right now, because there's no point in spending time describing it. After all, we can't understand it. On the other hand, we wouldn't be the first people to spend a lot of time discussing these ideas. The Ramban himself, despite his admonitions about our inability to possibly understand it, writes a whole sefer, Shar HaGmul, which is found in the end of Torah Adam, about the topic. Not just Olam Haba, but about the general topic of Schar V'Onesh, the topics we're going to be discussing. So obviously the Ramban didn't feel that the fact that we can't fully understand it or appreciate it does not mean that it's not something that we should spend time analyzing it. While the Rambam does not spend too much time focusing on it, he does spend some time, and others, as I said, like the Ramban, do spend a lot of time working on it. So the question then is, why should we spend time on it? Why does the Ramban spend time describing it and discussing it if it's something we can't understand anyway? So I think that there's a practical answer and a more fundamental answer. The practical answer is presented by the Michtav Meliyahu, Chelak Dalet, Pej Resh Nun Beis. Hichziku atzadikim zal neged einehem tamid es tziurei gan Eden v'atanug hanifla shebederech Hashem uveze nitzchu es yitzram v'amdu neged kol hanisyonos. That picturing, imagining Olam Haba is something that is very effective as a motivational tool. If you say to yourself, well, if I do what's right, I will get a tanug that's greater than any imaginal tanug that I could imagine experiencing in Olam Hazeh, so that serves to inspire me. Chazal horu lanu derech zos, ki arei ha'agadita shebishas uvemidrashim meleitz yurim chayim umuchashim mamish. V'ma adam yalamdem heitev yishmirem bezichrono v'yaleim al dimyono yesh b'kocham lif'ol alibo b'li safek. So the first point, he says, is that this is motivational. However, I believe that it goes much deeper. It's fascinating that the one explicit instance where Chazal told us that if you deny an ikar emuna, one of the, what the Rambam would say, the Yud Gimel Ikar Emuna, is with respect to denial of Olam Haba. The Mishnah in the beginning of Perek HaChelek says, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek Olam Haba, Shenemar, V'ameich Kulam Tzadikim Li'olam Yirshu Aretz, Derech Agav. Notice how the Mishnah proves that everyone has a Chelek in Olam Haba from the Pasuk that says, Li'olam Yirshu Aretz. We'll find again and again, and later on, Be'ezus Hashem will talk about what this means, but just to note it as we see it, that Yerushas Haaretz in Tanakh is understood as a reference to Olam Haba. We see this in many places. L'man Yerbu Yimeichem Al Ha'adama Asher Nishba, that Chazal says that that's referring to Al Ha'adama, is referring to Olam Haba. Al Haaretz is referring to Olam Haba, Li Olam Yirshu Aretz, and the like. And we'll talk about why that is. Meaning to say, even though, as we said before, there are no, or virtually no, explicit references to Olam Haba and Tanakh, there are many allusions, and the allusions generally take the form of descriptions of Eretz HaChaim and Yirshu Aretz, descriptions of Nachla, of land. And we'll get back to that point. So the Mishnah continues, Ve'elu she'en lam chelek l'olam haba, even though Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelek l'olam haba, somehow or another, it's also true that there are those that don't. Obviously, this doesn't just mean exceptions, because then it wouldn't be true. And that's another discussion. Tzadok in Takanas HaShavim spends a lot of time answering that question. Anyhow, Ve'elu she'en lam chelek l'olam haba, number one, Ha'omer ein tchias ha-mesim min ha-Torah. Someone who says there's no tchias ha-mesim in ha-Torah does not have olam haba. Why? The Gemara says, hu kafar ba lefikach lo yelo chelek ba. Meaning to say, you denied olam haba, so mida keneged mida, you don't have a chelek in olam haba. Now, the fact that Chazal made this point, as I said, almost more than any other of the Ikari Emuna, stressed that denial of this Ikar Emuna is the cause for no chelek in Olam Haba, hu kafar ba lefikach lo yelo chelek ba, and perhaps later on in the year we'll have a chance to talk about the other Ikari Emuna, but this certainly serves as a model for the Rambam's position that denial of Ikari Emuna leads to an automatic lack of chelek in Olam Haba. But be that as it may, the fact that Chazal thought it was so important to believe in Olam Haba, to the point that denial of Olam Haba means ein lo chelek in Olam Haba, so it certainly behooves us to at the very least understand kefi havanasenu, on a basic level, what is Olam Haba, and therefore, why is denial of Olam Haba such a fundamentally problematic idea? And thus, we see that even a bracha in Shmona Esrei is about Tchias HaMesim and the like. Now, you'll note that right now, I'm equating Olam Haba and Tchias HaMesim. That is the predominant view in Chazal. It's not the view of the Rambam, but you see in this Gemara, that's what Chazal say, and we'll have a chance later on today, Be'ezus Hashem, to discuss what is Olam Haba in relationship to Tchias HaMesim, when we get to beginning our discussion, what Olam Haba is. Yes? Yes, it's a good point also. The Mishnah doesn't just say if you deny Olam Haba, but if you say Ein Tchias HaMesim Min HaTorah, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin over there proves.
Why is it?
If somebody says, I believe in Tchias HaMesim, I just don't believe that it's alluded to in the Torah or in Tanakh, then they too don't have a Chelek in Olam Haba. Now the question is why about that as well, and hopefully we'll have a chance to discuss that as well. Since Parshas HaShavua, it's worthy to bring up that this, in fact, is a central theme of this week's Parsha, Parshas Toldos. The Gemara in Bava Basra says on Tazayin Mabeis, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Chamish Averos Avar Oso Rasha B'yom Hahu, on the day that that Esav sold the Bechorot Yaakov, he was over on Chamesh Averos. Bal Nairahmu Rasa, V'Haragas HaNefesh, V'Kafer B'Tchias HaMesin, V'Kafer B'Iker, V'Shat Es HaBechora. And this, of course, is very perplexing. Why, for example, Nairahmu Rasa? Nairahmu Rasa didn't even exist at that time, as the Rambam says at the beginning of Hilchos Ishos. In those days, Adam pogea ishto b'shuk, and you marry her. And yet Esav's avera was bal nairim rasa. Why does it say kafir b'tchias hamesim and kafir b'ikar? Obviously, if you're kafir b'ikar, you're kafir b'tchias hamesim. Why? It almost sounds like the kfir b'tchias hamesim was what led to a kfir b'ikar. Why focus on kfir b'tchias hamesim? Of all the kfiros in the Ikari Amuna, why tchias hamesim?
Is it also a little weird that, I don't know, did Esav just like stop on the bus or while he was walking and said, you know what, I don't believe it's Chias HaMesim.
Good point. Like, excellent. Excellent. The answer is, and I once heard this Mahalach from Mori V'Rabbi Rav Aaron Lapiansky, that the fundamental debate between Yaakov and Esav was about this point, was Olam Hazev versus Olam Haba. As Rashi says, they were merivim benachlash ne'olamim. As the Ramban at the beginning of this week's Parsha says, that the nekuda of Esav was ki ein chafetz b'ksilim rak shiyochlu v'yishtu v'yasu cheftzam b'itam v'lo yachushu liyo machar. Esav was all about the here and now. There's nothing in the future. There's nothing but the here and now. Hine anochi holech lamus v'lama zeli b'chora. I'm hungry, I'm going to eat. I'm not going to think about the future. All that exists is that which I can see. There's nothing beyond my immediate experience. That is what Esav was all about. And that's why Chazal understand that the mechira of the b'chora was a mechira of Olam Haba. It says in Pirkei Rebbe Lazar, that when Yaakov asked him for if he wanted to sell the Bechora, he said, "Ritzon chatol ata olam hazev, ani olam haba, shenemar michra chayom bechoras chali, keosasha shahayu bevetan iman, miyad kafar Esav betchias hamesin, v'amar ani holech lamus lamala zeli bechora." Hinei anochi holech lamus doesn't just mean I'm going to die, but it's kfir betchias hamesin. It means I'm going to die and then that's it. I'm going to cease to exist. There's nothing else besides the here and now. All there is Olam Hazeh. Hine anochi olech lamus. So what do I need the Bechorah for? What do I need Olam Haba for? All there is what I can see. That was the Nekud of Esav, the here and now. And you see that in that Chazal, the Chazal that says those Averos. What's the idea, for example, of a Naira Murasa? The idea of a Naira Murasa is that there is something which is in the future, meaning to say you don't just even though she's still Bevesaviha, she's already an Eishes Ish because of that future event that's going to happen. That's what Erison is all about. It's not just you get married and then that's it, you're together. It's in the future. Yes, right now she's Bevesavia, just like she was yesterday, but because of the future orientation, she's already deemed an Eishes Ish. And that's what the idea is. The pshat is, he was kofir b'tchias hamesim, and al yidei zeh, he came to a kfir b'ikar. Because he denied tchias hamesim, because he denied olam haba, because he denied that there's nothing besides the here and now, so through that, he came to a kfir b'tchias hamesim. And if you want to see a very beautiful development of this idea, look at the Netzach Yisrael of the Maral, Perek Tes Vav, where he develops the notion that the machlokus between Yaakov and Esav was one fundamentally about Olam Hazeh versus Olam Haba. He begins actually with a very interesting question. He says, one might be bothered that if we, after all, are the Am HaNivchar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's special people, Bnei Bechori Yisrael, why is it that our state is one of such degradation? Why is it that so much of our history is one in which we've been trampled over and have lived in such a lowly state? And the Maral says, it's not enough to just say, okay, Mipnecha ta'enu galinu me'atzeinu. It doesn't make sense that we would so b'chol dor v'ador omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu if we're the Am HaNivchar. And his answer is that that question only makes sense if you assume that our ikar existence is one of olam hazeh. So then it would taka be very shver that our olam hazeh is always one of such intense and terrible persecution. But our focus is olam haba, and our ikar chiyus is olam haba. And that being the case, so then it's not so strange. We do need olam hazeh, but our relationship to olam hazeh is only as a means to get to olam haba. Ayin sham, where he's marich. Now, we have to understand this a little deeper, and I hope at the end of our discussion we're going to get back to this point in the following sense. Many people will object, and they'll say, you know, Judaism is not an otherworldly religion. We are about olam hazeh. And we're not supposed to focus on olam haba. And that is true as well. Bekitzer, and we'll be marich on this later, our focus, even if the purpose of our existence is olam haba, but our focus has to be olam hazeh. And that is one of the reasons, we'll see later on, why the Rishonim give that olam haba is not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. Later on, also again, towards the end of our discussion, we'll get back to that question. Why is it that if Olam Haba is such a fundamental principle, it's not mentioned in the Torah, in Tanakh? And we'll see, this is a question that all the Rishonim were bothered by, such a strong question. We'll see Be'ezras Hashem 8 answers in the Rishonim to this question. But one of the answers is exactly this point. We're not supposed to be focused on it. And that's not necessarily a stira to the idea that the Maral says over here, and that you see in, for example, the beginning of Nesil Sisharim and the like, that our purpose, we are created in order for our existence in Olam Haba. Even if that's true, that doesn't mean it should either be our motivation or our focus. And we'll have a chance to develop that idea shortly. Yes?
I think it's possible that in Europe, especially medieval times, leading up perhaps to the Enlightenment, even more so. I mean, while the Jews were in the ghettos, that the focus that people had was towards Olam Haba. And in America, that's why, you know, you can have people, anti-Zionists, saying Chas v'Shalom to leave Europe. Eretz Yisrael is going to be our main focus. That's what we're sitting and learning, and it should be Olam Haba. I'm dealing with Olam Hazeh. And in America, with sort of quote-unquote modern American Jewry, no one really wants to hear about Olam Haba. They want to hear, okay, how can Torah impact my life and be its own reward here in Olam Hazeh? Because it just seems that, that you know, when you look at Mesilas Yesharim and Shari Tshuva, all these, you know, ancient Musar texts, you know, they're focused like, they're very strictly, you know, Olam Haba focused. Not that they can't have a relevance to what they have, but when you read, like, sort of the modern Musar, they're, especially, you know, things like Amish.com, they very focus on how Torah can enhance every aspect of your life. Here, not just if you do it, you'll get in good with Hashem and get an Olam Haba. So you think the focus sort of changed?
It's certainly possible, and it is. People still are very interested in Olam Haba. It's funny. A couple of times I went to places to speak and asked them what topics they wanted, and they say Olam Haba. It's not necessarily the best topic to talk about, but it's an interesting point. But yes, I do think that your point does make a lot of sense. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that he remembers once, back when he was in Europe, two little boys were fighting over a little ball that they got, and one of the kids said to his friend, "I'll give you Olam Haba if you give me the ball." And he said, you see that at least in those days, it was such a real existence that, like, 4-year-old children, 5-year-old children would see that as something tradable for a commodity. We could talk about, it also relates to this week's parsha, could you sell your Olam Haba? But it was something that was so real for them that even a little child would see it as something worth giving up a ball for. Or, anyhow. So,
even in America.
So that's beautiful. I mean, it's wrong, but it's beautiful. The next thing I want to talk about, again, before we describe what Olam Haba is a very important yisod about Olam Haba, which is that the schar that we're talking about, for the most part, is not external, but it's naturalistic. When a parent is trying to be mechanech their children, so one is always looking for chinuch to motivate children through natural consequences or natural rewards. If I go ahead and I say, if you clean your room, I'll give you a candy, a lollipop, so that might work, but that's not a natural reward. It's totally artificial. There's no inherent connection between the lollipop and their clean room. And likewise, a consequence. If you don't clean your room, I'm going to take away your Shabbos party. So then there's no inherent connection. In chinuch, to the extent that it's possible, it's not always so easy to figure out, one wants to try to show and highlight the natural consequences. If you do what's wrong, then you'll suffer. If your room isn't clean, you won't find your homework or you won't have your clothing. And if you do clean it, you'll find what you need. And lahavdil, the same thing is true when it comes to both the schar and the onesh, la'asid lavo, that olam haba is something which is naturalistic to a large degree, meaning to say that it's not paradise and bliss which is unrelated to the Torah and the mitzvahs that we do, but a natural consequence and outgrowth of doing that which is right is the schar of Olam Haba. And likewise, a natural consequence of violating the Torah are the onshin of Gehenim and Karis and the like. Later on, today, Be'ezras Hashem will discuss the Rambam's position, how it's a natural consequence, largely of intellectual achievements, or does the Rambam really say it? But for a different perspective, a more mystical perspective on this idea, take a look at the Nefesh HaChayim, Shar Aleph, Perek Yud Beis. He writes, the Amar ki es kol ma'aseh, velo ki al kol ma'aseh, ha'inyan kamo shakasav in Sefer Iyov, ki poel adam yishalim lo. The pasuk in Iyov, ki poel Hashem yishalim lo, is telling us that a person gets poel adam. In other words, the work of your hands. Chazal frequently used the term beis olamo. The house that you built is the house that you live in. That is a mashal for olam haba. Meaning to say, it's not something external, but you yourself build it. Skipping a little, v'zeu schar ha'olam haba, shehu maaseh yidei ha'adam atzmo, she'achar preidas nafsho mehaguf, hu ha'oleh lehisadei lehasbia nafsho, b'tzachtzuchus ha'oros v'akochos v'olamos ha'kadoshim, shenitosvu v'nisrabu mimasav ha'tovim. That every time a person does a mitzvah, learns Torah, especially if it's lishma. So he's bon el lamos. Much of Sefer Nefesh HaChayim is about this point, how the actions that we do in the tachtonim affect the elyonim. And it's those olamos that we build, that we live in, la'asid lavo. V'zeh she'amru razal, kol yisrael yeshlam chelek le'olam haba. Chazal were meduyik. They don't say, kol yisrael yeshlam chelek ba'olam haba. Because if they were to say ba'olam haba, would imply that there's this thing that already exists called olam haba, and if you follow Torah and mitzvot, then you go to that place. No, it's le'olam haba in the sense that you create it. V'im yitzdak ha'adam yitnu lo bischaro chelak mimenu. Aval ha'emesh olam, sorry, that goes back on what bo'olam haba would mean. Aval ha'emesh olam haba hu ma'aseh yidei ha'adam atzmo. Shehirchiv v'hosif v'hiskin chelek le'atzmo b'ma'asav l'kol acha shekol Yisrael yeshlam l'chol echad chelek ha'kedusha v'aoros v'atzach tzachos shehiskin v'hosif l'olam haba m'ma'asav ha'tovim. And skipping a little, he says, the same thing is true l'hepech v'chein onesh ha'gehenim in yano gamkein shachet atzmo hu ansho. The chet itself is the onesh. It's not that there's this place called Gehenim that you go to if you sin. You create it. Kemo shekasav, avonosav yulkedunu es harasha, uvechevle chet chataso yitmoch. You become ensnared and entrapped in your own sins. Tiasrecha ra'ascha v'gomer, Kemoshin is bayer. Shekasher ha'adam osa achas mimitzvos Hashem asher lo seyasena. Ha'pigam ve'achurba nirsham chas v'shalom tekef l'mala b'sharsho. Ulu'umase imolai ha'chriva hu me'kimu magbir kochos v'chayle atuma v'aklipos, etc. V'hu b'chayev b'gehenim mamish ha'mekifo b'esas yisachet. It's not even just after you die, you're in Gehenim. When you sin ba'olam hazeh, you're in Gehenim immediately. Rak she'enu margish adayin ad achar p'tiraso shenilkat az b'reshes asher echin hen kolchos ha'tuma v'hamazikin she'navo mima'asav. You don't perceive, perhaps, the effects of your actions. You don't feel that you're surrounded by Gehenim immediately, but that doesn't mean it's not true. And with this, skipping a little bit, the Nefesh HaChaim explains a very perplexing Chazal. V'lachein, Amru Razal and Bava Kama, Kol HaOmer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatran, Hu Yivatru Chayav. And so, likewise in Yerushalmi and Midrashim. And he says that this is a little bit shver, because if we said about a human being, he's never Mevater, right? He always sticks up for what he's entitled to. He never is forgiving of those who are somehow wrong him or do what they shouldn't do. So you would say that that's not a very nice person, right? Going back to chinuch of children, we're always trying to teach our children to be vatranim, to be mevater on certain things. Maybe you're entitled to this toy, but let your little sister have it. And yet, we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a vatran. So this is a broader question. As you know, Masil Sharm talks a lot about how we coincide that idea with the notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also a Rahman. But the Nefesh HaChaim says it's very simple. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't a Vatran because the onshin that we receive are not Einam al derech ha'onish v'nekima. When is it shaykh to be a Vatran? If you wrong me and I then have the right to be ma'anish you, so I will forgive the onesh. But that's not the pshat in the onshim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we get. Rak ha'chatayim tirdof ra, the chayit itself destroys us. We destroy ourselves. It's not some type of external reward, but chatayim tirdof ra, sinning and acting against the Torah is self-destructive. Shachet atzmo hu ansho, ki me'es habriya kava hu yisbarach shemo kol sidrei hanhagas ha'olamos, shiyu tluyim kefi his orirus maise ha'adam hatov im hatovim v'arayim. On a simpler level, the Tiferes Yisrael on that first Mishnah in Perek HaChelek says that when we talk about Gehenim, Gehenim is lo b'derech nekima chas v'shalom. Gehenim is not a form of nekama. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a tov, umeitiv, and everything he does is lehetiv. So what is it? Rak letovasa, lezakika, ulezachicha, laneshama, elyona hazos. At least standard Gehenim, the Gehenim that we say maximum, Mishpat Rishayim b'Gehenim is 12 months, not the exceptional Gehenim that might be eternal for extraordinarily wicked people. Perhaps we'll discuss that later when we get to the Shaar Gemul. But standard Gehenim is a matana. The matana is that it affords the opportunity of the soul to purify itself because it's become tainted in this world, so as to allow it to enjoy the Tainug Haruchni that is Olam Haba, or Gan Eden, or the like. And therefore we shouldn't look at it as nekama, but rather as a gift, an opportunity. The same thing holds true with Gilgul HaNeshamos, that notion that this is an opportunity for a tikkun, while it might be painful, but it's not painful for the sake of punishment, it's painful for the sake of an opportunity. Yes?
Yeah, based on this idea of the Nefesh HaChaim that when a person does not bear, they instantly create a Gehenim for themselves. If that means he's around and becomes a shuur when he's described as a Kodesh Shem Acher, if Gehenim is really an onesh, like you said it after the fact, then you wouldn't really have to say that necessarily because Hashem can do tshuva, it takes away. But if you say that you instantaneously build this.
That's a good point, yeah.
And then have to change your whole.
I think. I don't know if they're referring to the same exact thing, but I think it's that is that does show a commonality. Yeah. Likewise, the Ramban in Vayikra, Perek Yud Ches. There he discusses a very important idea. We won't go through it now inside, but he talks about how there could be various motivations for doing Torah mitzvos. Shelo lishma is the lowest level. The level above that is almanas lezakos bahen liolam haba. That's what he calls ovdim meyira. Above that is haoskim b'mitzvos me'ava kedin v'karaui im iske olam hazeh. And the highest one is haozvim kol inyane haolam hazeh ve'enam mashkichim alav ki'ilu enam bali agof. In other words, they're totally separate from olam hazeh, as though they don't have a physical body. V'kol machshavtam v'kavanasam bivoram bilvad. Their entire focus is on the Ribono Shel Olam. This is very similar to what the Rambam describes at the end of Mor Nevuchim regarding the Avos, that their focus was constantly on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kinyan Eliyahu. And then he says that for such people, Yichyu La'ad Begufam Uvenafsham Kanir Bekasav Eliyahu. Perhaps we'll explain this a little later, but Bekitzer, what he's saying is that because for such people in that extraordinary madrega, there's no stira between their guf and their nefesh, so then there's no need for them to separate at Misa. In other words, just like Adam HaRishon Kodem HaChet, had he eaten from, not eaten from the Eitz Hadas Tov HaRa, but eaten from the Eitz HaChaim, he would have lived li'olam with his guf. The only reason why we need there to be a period from of the neshama to the guf is because la'achar HaChet there was a stira. And therefore, if someone reaches a madrega, the Ramban says, where there isn't a stira, then when they die, their soul doesn't need to separate from their body. Be that as it may, the point that the Ramban is bringing out here is that the various rewards that a person get very much depend on their motivation. And that, too, is a naturalistic idea. So if someone is motivated to do mitzvot shelo lishma, so then they'll get their reward in Olam Hazeh. And with this we could explain what is otherwise a very perplexing idea. The Gemara says in a number of places, Brachos Zayin Amud Aleph, Tainus Yud Aleph, and the like, that the Gemara asks, Tzadik V'ralo Rasha V'Tovlo, that was Moshe Rabbeinu's Kasha, and the Ribono Shel Olam's answer is, Tzadik Sheinu Gamur, Rasha Sheinu Gamur, meaning to say, why are there Rishayim in this world that are matzliach? Because they did some good things in their life, and accordingly, they deserve some reward. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the Rishayim, gives it to them in this world. And why are there tzaddikim that suffer in this world? Because they've done some bad things, and because HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves them so much, so he gives them their own shin in this world, so that they will be left to experience Olam Haba without having to suffer for those onshin. That's the Gemara. Obviously, that's not a complete answer to the question of Tzadik V'ralo, Rasha V'Tovlo. If it was the complete answer that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, we would wonder why Yirmiyahu and others keep on asking the question, Madu Aderech V'Shan Salecha, and the like. Maybe we'll talk about that issue a little more when we talk about Hashkacha. But the basic Gemara is very, very problematic, because it seems like it's unfair. If it is the case that the pleasure of Olam Haba is so much greater than the pleasure of Olam Hazeh, and the pain of Gehenim, or the afterlife, is so much worse than the pain of Olam Hazeh, so then it's not fair to give tzaddikim their reward for their mitzvos in Olam Haba, and Rishayim reward for their mitzvos in Olam Hazeh, and give tzaddikim their punishment for their averos in Olam Hazeh, and Rishayim their punishments la'achar misa. That's simply unfair. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's fair, and he's just. So he should give everybody, it's true, they're Rishayim, but if they did mitzvot, so they deserve to be rewarded. So why are they being penalized, as it were, by being rewarded in Olam Hazeh, punished in Olam Haba? But the answer is very simple. It's what we've said. HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards a person based on that which they want. If a person is Olam Hazeh focused, and what the Ramban here is saying is that means even if I do my mitzvos, al menas lekabel pras, I'm motivated by reward, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me exactly what I want. And what do I want? I want Olam Hazeh, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to me. It's part of the idea that we're saying that reward and punishment is naturalistic. It's the case that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards a person and punishes a person exactly according to that which they want. So if a person is Olam Hazeh focused, then his schar for his mitzvos will be in Olam Hazeh. That's also true because the mitzvos themselves are of lesser value because they're motivated by the schar. And likewise, the Ramban says in that later on in Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Chaf Tes, that when it comes to punishments, the same is true. The Ramban there, when he talks about kares, so he talks about how there are three different levels of kares that relate to three different types of averos, and he says at the end, first of all, that you see from the idea the third type of kares, which is hikares tikares, it's kares both olam hazen olam haba, you see here at least a strong allusion to the notion of Olam Haba, or the afterlife in the Torah, and he says v'teda v'tazkil k'yakrisos haniskaros b'nefesh b'tachon gadol b'kiyam haneshamos. You see here, from the fact that the Torah punishes things in the afterlife, that clearly the Torah assumes that there is kiyam haneshamos, and he continues and he says u'lekach lo yitzar hakasav lomar ki b'schus ha-mitzvos yeh kiyuma aval Yomar ki ba'onesh averos tisanag v'titma v'tikares minakim arayu. Interesting point. He says that the Torah doesn't tell us about Olam Haba, but it does tell us about kares, or losing Olam Haba, because one is natural. We'll talk about this a little later. The fact that the soul continues to exist after separating from the body, after a person dies, is natural. It's obvious. The soul is a spiritual existent, and therefore there's no reason why anybody would imagine that it would cease to exist once it's separated from the body. It's only physical things that deteriorate and die, and the soul, which is spiritual, is obviously something that's going to continue to live, so it doesn't have to say that. That's why the Torah, he says later on, only focuses on physical rewards and physical punishments like tal umatar, etc., because that's a chiddush, that's surprising. And likewise, kares hanefesh, hikares tikares, is a surprise, is counterintuitive, does in a sense go against nature, and that's why that's something that has to be stressed. Yes?
Can it be like even more that a rush, even more naturalistic that a rush, the maisa, it's impossible, I mean, to, for anybody to attain, not everybody, but to attain an extreme amount of wealth, and go to all the parties, all the big frat parties, whatever they do. I mean, they would have to work day and night, and they would have to neglect other things, like things that would make them a deeper, more spiritual person. So, not naturally, they gave up, you know, focusing on those things to work day and night to attain wealth and to go to clubs or whatever. So, but a tzaddik, just a business guy who decides that, okay, I'll work at my business and I'll make a good living, but instead of working at my business day and night, I'll work and working to attain an extreme amount of wealth, I'll give that up to focus on other things. So the Maisa, he's not going to get Olam Hazeh.
Mm-hmm.
By nature, he's not going to get the full Olam Hazeh pleasure experience. He's saving it for the next one. So the question about, you know, it's not necessarily Hashem, you know, takes it out and throws it at them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a system that Hashem sort of put into the world. You know, there's only 24 hours in a day. You know,
mm-hmm. I hear.
Hours.
Yeah.
Would the Nefesh HaChayim be able to, the idea of intrinsic reward, can that go with what the Ramban's saying about that, I mean, I guess it's a chazal, that when one person does one action, so it's possible to have two different types of reward, the Rasha who does it of a reward in the world to come, and Tzadik who does it of a reward in the world in Olam Emes. So if you say that everything's intrinsic, everything's built from the mitzvah itself, so then...
Yeah, it's a good point. I think what he would say it actually like the Ramban, in the sense that the mitzvah that's done lishma is a very, very different mitzvah than a mitzvah that's done shelo lishma. So what the mitzvah done lishma creates is something in the olamos halyonim, whereas what the mitzvah done shelo lishma creates is something in the olamos hatachtonim. It itself creates something different. Okay, there's, since it's Parshas HaShavua, we'll mention it, that many sources, especially in the Achronim, have a division, which is that when you look at the Makoros, it does sound like there might, in addition to this naturalistic reward that we've been talking about, also be a type of reward which perhaps isn't naturalistic. The Gemara says that even a baby who dies has Olam Haba. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara Sanhedrin when exactly at what age a baby gets Olam Haba, different opinions. Very interesting Gemara. And this very much relates to the idea in this week's parsha, the idea of selling Bechorah, or can you sell your Olam Haba? The Achronim, the Imre Bina, as well as the Meshiv Davar, both have a very similar dichotomy in discussing shilas about people selling Olam Haba and selling their schar. The way the Imre Bina puts it is that there's two types of schar, indeed. There's what he calls the schar gmuli and the schar skuli. One is the natural reward and one is the, if we want, the artificial reward, the supernatural reward. He comes to this conclusion from an interesting stira. He says that if you look at the Chazal, we find an idea that there's such a thing as a Yisachar Zvulun relationship, that there are no tlim schar Torah biyachad. Like Rashi says in Zvachim and Daf Beis about Shimon Achi Azariah, Sheichelak Lazariah b'schar Talmudo Shel Shimon. The Shulchan Aruch paskins this way. It says that, at least the Rama writes, Mi sheyafsher lo lilmod mipnei she'eino yodea klal, lilmod o mipnei atirda sheyesh lo yaspik lacherim halomdim. And the Rama adds, v'teichashiv lo ki'ilu lomed ba'atzmo. So if you look at Rabbi Kiva Eger on that Shulchan Aruch, he quotes a tshuva from the Paigon, which is quoted also in Maram al-Shakar, and says that it's impossible. Adam shenasan l'chaver zahov al menashe yikra b'torah. Can you sell the schar of Talmud Torah? Says Rav Haigon, of course not, because the schar of Talmud Torah is natural. It's something that I, when I learn Torah, so I understand certain things. I come to a certain hakara of emes, and that hakara, that purification of my soul, is what allows me in a natural way to enjoy the spiritual pleasure of Olam Haba. And that's something that can't be sold. Haschar sheyesh lo al pe'ulaso hu. And therefore, selling it or trading it is impossible. So how are we miyashev these two things? That's Rabbi Kiva Eger's kasha. And to that, he answers that there are the Imre Bina answers, Chelek Aleph Perek Yud Gimel, that there are these two types of rewards. There's the Schar Skuli, Shemekabel Shafa Loki V'chius Ruchani Basios HaMitzvos, that naturalistic type of reward, and Schar Gmuli, Dehainu Etzem Schar HaMitzvah. And one could be sold, and one can't be sold. Likewise, there's a really fascinating tshuva from the Meshiv Davar. Someone asked the Netziv, he was living in Tveria, and he was a very wealthy person, and he got this person who was known as a very pious person to sell half of his Olam Haba for an immense sum, 22,000 rubles. I assume that's an immense sum. It sounds like it from the tshuva. So then he paid half of it, and then he had a dream that, you know, this guy wasn't really such a tzaddik after all, and what should he do? So he wrote the Netziv. So first of all, the Netziv said, it's pretty obvious that this guy isn't such a tzaddik if he's willing to sell off his Olam Haba for money. You should have realized that from the start. Goes back to our Yaakov and Esav discussion at the beginning. Anyone who's willing to trade in Olam Haba for money, for Olam Hazeh, so obviously he doesn't have the right values. And then he says, but you see certain cases in Chazal where people did it, and he says, no, that's different. Among other things, they were doing it in order to get more Olam Haba, in order to do more mitzvos. That's the pshat in Shimon Achi Azariah. That's agav, he says, you know, that's the idea of the famous story of the Gra, that he sold his olam haba, schar and the mitzvahs. In other words, the idea is that the external reward, so he was, the Gra was willing to sell. It's because he wanted to do it lishma. Anyhow, so the Gra base, sorry, the Netziv concludes that when it comes to his conclusion, same idea of the Emre Bina, just a little different. He's machalik between schar Torah and schar mitzvos. When it comes to schar mitzvos, so then that's somewhat external. It's not as naturalistic, and that's something that theoretically can be sold, right? Kach me'ein zahav del schar mitzvos mischar Torah. The schar mitzvos who ke'ein zechus ish medini v'chol yisrael yichol nukablo ma'she'en ke'ein schar Torah who yoshiv b'yeshiva shal ma'ala u'mish'en aray l'kach eino efshir l'kabel ha'on egaruchani. It's definitionally impossible. So skipping a little, right? Inyan didan dafilu na'le al adash efshir limkor schar mitzvah y efshir limkor schar Torah shereyim yavo al scharau Yisba kalon mechubad. He says, imagine, it doesn't work. And if it did work, imagine how you would feel. It's like someone, you know, who, because of valor in war, the king rewarded him by allowing him to sit next to him at his table. And then he goes and he sells that. So now some other guy who's a worthless guy, he sits next to the king at the table. So the king is not going to put up with that. But even if he did, the guy would be so embarrassed. What could be more embarrassing than sitting at a table with a bunch of Talmud Chachamim if you're an Amaretz? So that's his basic point. Yes? That's what he argues. He says, Yisachar Zvulun Shutfus, you could do. Again, the Netziv says it a little differently than Imre Bina and the like, but the basic Mahalich is that it works for some things and it doesn't work for other things. In other words, the external reward could be split, and you have the mitzvah of helping Torah, but the naturalistic type of the naturalistic reward you don't get. Not everybody agrees to that. Some, there are makoros that it works entirely. There's a beautiful shmuz that's in Mishnah Sevarin, Ron Cutler. So he was at it sounds like he was at a dinner when he said this, I don't recall, and he said he was, of course, praising, you know, the donor by supporting Torah. He gets the same chelak in Torah as us, and we're learning. So he says, so Taka, why would someone go to yeshiva and learn? You know, if you could get the same schar by supporting Torah, so why would you go to yeshiva? So he says, no, it's very simple. He says, if you support Torah, so you just get olam haba. But if you go to yeshiva and learn, so then you get olam haza and olam haba. Okay. Yes?
I mean, the whole theory would be now that if you super, then you actually gave the money and you weren't the money.
Yes. And I think that's the answer. In other words, with respect to not... again, that's the hakira that they're saying. There's two elements. With respect to that problem of nama de kisufa, so then what you're getting is well-deserved, and that's overcome, and that's indeed equal. The person who supports Torah and the person who learns Torah are equal in that respect, with respect to that point. But with respect to the natural consequences that by learning Torah and being mezakeh chiyur neshama and being makir ha'emes and the like, so that's something that's intrinsic and inherent, and therefore by definition non-transferable. That's the basic point that a number of the Achronim say. Yes. This is Mamish Parashas Shavuah. But not for now. It's there's a whole literature on it. Even going back to the Rishonim, there's a tshuva, the Rivash, for example, that talks all about why the kinyan of Esav selling Yaakov the Bechorah wasn't an Asmachta. And certainly that's the intuitive point. So yes, absolutely. Yes.
Would the naturalistic aspect of Talmud Torah, would that run counter to the idea of learning Ilui Nishmas, someone who's departed? That if we're saying that it's a naturalistic, that building.
Yes, that part presumably would be.
That would preclude learning Ilui Nishmas.
But there's more to it. In other words, the basic idea of learning Ilui Nishmas is that if this person caused left in the world people that are now learning because of him or through him. So he is bringing about a tikkun, and that itself is a tremendous skula. So even if learning Li'ilui Nishmas isn't the same as learning yourself, doesn't mean to say that it's not very powerful and effective. And that's, again, that's the idea that the Netziv, the Rebbeinu, they're all saying. There's something to it. It's tremendous. It's just not the same. Yes?
Rav and Kala would disagree with that. Isn't there a Gemara and Sotam that says that they stand together?
Yeah, yeah. That's part. If you look at the Tshuvos, you'll see they grapple with these issues. So one way to say it is they stand together within one respect. Or you could say, no, that somehow or another that they are indeed equal. Okay. I guess we only have one last point that I want to do today, and then we'll be out of time. And that is the question that we alluded to before, which is one of motivation. Is it appropriate to be motivated to do Torah and mitzvos for Olam Haba? So the Rambam clearly and unequivocally says no. If you look at Hilchos Tshuva, the beginning of Perek Yud, Al Yomar Adam Hareini Ose Mitzvah Satora Vaosek Bechachmaso Kadesha Kabel Kola Bracho Saksuvos Ba O Kadesha Ezke Lachai Olam Haba. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says Al Tiuka Vadam Hamisham Shemesarav Amanas Lakabel Pras. That's not just true with respect to a pras in Olam Hazeh, says the Rambam, but rather it's also true with respect to Olam Haba. Perhaps it's a little different as we saw in the Ramban, but fundamentally that's being Oved Hashem Meira and not being Oved Hashem Me'ava. Oved Hashem Me'ava is someone who is Osik B'Torah V'Mitzvos V'Holich B'Nesivos HaChachma Lo Mipnei Davar Ba'Olam V'Lo Mipnei Yira Sara V'Lo Kedei Lira Shatova Ela Ose HaEmes Mipnei Shehu Emes V'Sof HaTova Lavo Biglala. Avas Hashem means doing what's right because it's right, doing what's true because it's true, not for any other motivation. Surely one will be rewarded, but that shouldn't be the motivation. As we saw before, the Ramban says a similar idea. The Sefer Ikrim in Per Gimel Lamed Vav points out that is what Ava means. Ava is, by definition, doing something for another person. Milashon Hav. If you do it for yourself, so that is not ahava, or that's, he gives the example, he says, you know, people say they love, I love fish. So it means, you know, that old story, it comes from the Sefer Ikrim over here. That means you love yourself, you like to eat fish, right? Ahava is all about doing it for the other person. Ve'en belibo tachlis acher, rak la'sos ritzon ahahuv. And to the extent that it is for yourself, that isn't ahava. He writes that this was the Madreg of Avram Avinu, who is known as Avraham Ahuvi in Tanakh, because he did it entirely not for himself. And that's how he explains the story of the Akedah. The Akedah was something that you couldn't possibly do for yourself. And he goes even further. He has a fascinating idea. He gets it to some degree from his Rebbe, the Drashus Aran, that Avram Avinu was not actually commanded in doing the Akedah. Kach nas Pinchas Chidcha, wasn't it Tzivoy? Amar Avram Avinu l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel Olam, Galil yadua l'fanecha, shebesha she'amarta li, Kach nas Pinchas Chidcha, asher ahavta Yitzchak v'aleo li li'ola, ha'yisi yachol omar v'alo kvar amarta li, ki v'yitzchak yikar l'chazara. If I wanted to have a taina, I could have had a taina. But I didn't, because I wanted to do Ritzoncha, because it was totally me'ahava. Now, you have Rabbi Penner's now, I assume? Supposed to. So I'm going to, I guess we, I'll just, I don't want to go over time, but we'll pick up with this next time. There are many makoros that seem to go against this. And one answer, which we're going to see, Be'ezus Hashem, at the beginning of next year, is from Reb Tzadok, who makes the following distinction. A person can want Olam Haba because that's schar, that's reward, and someone who's motivated in that sense is indeed Oved Es HaRav HaManas L'Kabel Pras, and that is not the ideal Madrega. And then a person could want Olam Haba and be motivated by Olam Haba, because Olam Haba is the ultimate kirva to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the ultimate tveikus. It's the ultimate manifestation of the Ava. Someone who does mitzvos and Torah because they want Olam Haba, because that's the place that they could cling and cleave and become close to and understand and come to the realization of the truth in a way that's impossible in any other context. So that's not considered being Oved as a Rav Almanas L'Kabbal Pras. You're doing it for Olam Haba, but not Olam Haba as a Schar, but Olam Haba as a Makom of Kirva to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Hakaras HaEmes. And that motivation is not inappropriate. That's not Begeder being Oved as a Rav Almanas L'Kabbal Pras. So a person could do mitzvos for getting Olam Haba and that be Shelo Almanas L'Kabbal Pras, and it could be Almanas L'Kabbal Pras. It depends on how you see Olam Haba. And that dichotomy, that distinction, really goes back to what we've been saying the whole time. These two types of onshin and two types of schar, the natural, the supernatural, the internal, the external, and the like. That even within motivation, and even within motivation for Olam Haba, you have this distinction, this dichotomy. You could want Olam Haba because it's the greatest possible pleasure, or you could want Olam Haba because you want to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Either way, it's the greatest possible pleasure, but in one case the motivation is lishma, and in one case it's shelo lishma. You should all have a wonderful Shabbos. Try to come on time next week.
Next week.
Do we have cheer next week?
No.
Aye. How are you going to manage for 2 weeks? All right. Be'ezus Hashem in 2 weeks. Shkayach.